Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
Morning, everyone. Welcome. Thursday, 21st of May. Rain continues to tumble down here in Melbourne town. Great to have you with us. We're here for Melbourne Airport Parking and Red Energy. And for the McCafe official coffee partner, going to be speaking to Peter Drury. He's an EPL commentator. Interesting times over there. Find out what's going on. Welcome, Peter.
How you doing? Good to speak to you.
Great to talk to you. This is, here in Australia, our last sport-free weekend, in actual fact, because rugby league's going to commence next weekend and our AFL competition not too far behind it. How are you coping over there, and when's the likely return date for the English Premier League?
Oh, so jealous of you. So jealous. I'm afraid we're way behind you. There's talk of the Premier League coming back second half of June now, realistically speaking. There was a suggestion of the 12th of June, but with every passing day, that seems less and less likely. We've been horribly sport-starved, really, for 2-3 months now. Obviously, we should be in our summer now. We should be well into our cricket season, which isn't happening at all. I think you guys were supposed to come over for a few one-dayers this English summer, which obviously isn't going to happen. And from a football point of view, we're in this terrible hiatus of being three quarters of the way through our season and stuck. And the narrative is a horrible one because nobody knows quite whether we'll be able to resolve it properly.
And we can relate to the enormous logistical challenge of trying to get, you know, we have 18 teams in our AFL competition, so trying to find some sort of common ground with all of those in terms of quarantine, and different states have got different laws about whether you have to go into quarantine. Yeah. Trying to get our competition going has been, you know, a Herculean effort. I'd imagine it would be almost impossible for you guys.
Well, the trouble is that you have to respect so many different opinions, don't you? And as you say, so many different, if you like, regional variations, and the extent to which it is affecting people because of their particular circumstances, how respectful you have to be of players who have young families, or indeed, perhaps more pertinently, you know, old relatives, mums and dads and grandparents and so on, that they're worried about taking the virus back to potentially. Our Premier League teams actually, you know, we're taking baby steps because our Premier League teams have been back in training today for the first time, non-contact training. But there have been one or two high-profile players who've said, I'm sorry, not for me yet. And you've got to respect that. You have got to respect it because we're only talking about a silly game here. It just happens to be a silly game that a lot of us love, which can't be compared with life itself. And these dilemmas, what I always say when I'm talking about this is that I just give thanks every day that I'm not in charge, because my goodness me, the logistics are horrendous. Even in terms of sporting integrity, you know, to what extent is it important to finish a football season? And if we don't finish a football season, to what extent do we consider the season up to now finite? You know, it's horrendous. Who is the champion? Who gets relegated? There's millions and millions of pounds at stake.
Hey, Pete, so much to be considered, but and there's so much on the table now because every sport across the world has taken a financial hit. I was really interested to read some comments from the boss of the Bundesliga talking about whether or not they could look at the idea of actually introducing a salary cap in their competition. How do you think this is going to roll across the world sport?
Well, listen, I think this is a really interesting long-term discussion to be had. Sport is going to have to clip its wings, isn't it? I'm not across the sort of detailed situation in your country, but here in Europe, certainly where soccer, as you know, it is really the dominant sport, it has become almost bigger than itself. You know, it doesn't know how to deal at the top level with the huge quantities of money, sometimes at the expense of teams further down the competitive pyramid. There's a very good chance, I think, that a lot of our famous old clubs, which perhaps, you know, aren't at the top of the tree at the moment, could even go out of business over the next few months. And football is going to have to learn, I hope, to look after its own, you know, because otherwise we're suddenly going to find that we're starting all over again with a really diminished product. Having said which, the optimistic spin on this is that it'll be a wake-up call, and we sort of return to some sort of not just commercial reality, but an understanding of where sport sits in society overall, you know, and maybe we find a bit of sporting humility and understanding of where the roots are and the community of sport and so on. I know these are all big sort of heavy topics, but I hope you understand where I'm driving at, as opposed to these massive conglomerates, these huge clubs which earn gazillions of pounds, sometimes seemingly greedily at the expense of the rest of the game around the country, the continent, the world.
Hey, Peter, we 100% understand and agree. We have a salary cap in play here, and I think it's been for the betterment of the competition. And these are the issues in these times that are going to be discussed and negotiated.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think salary caps, that sort of thing, very much on the table here in the football world. I think, funnily enough, our rugby league competition, which possibly isn't as high profile as yours, but it's a fairly substantial thing, particularly in the north of England, is much more realistic in terms of salary caps and so on, and has regulations. And certainly, perhaps just beneath the top level, it's something that football, I think, could learn from.
Hey, Peter, our audience has loved hearing your voice. We're enormously respected around the world, and it's a great pleasure to have you on our show this morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's great to connect with you guys. Keep enjoying your sport, and good luck having some back. We're green with every over here.
Leon Cameron's about to join us very, very shortly. Got questions without notice. Got a busy day tomorrow. Sammy Doherty from the Blues is going to jump on Dustin Fletcher about his son, Mason, who's going to punt over in the college system, and Dr. Peter Bruckner will answer those questions about the diets of the players as they resume training. Wispy, so got it covered tomorrow.
Yes, and fellas, a lot of people are still sending in texts regarding our wine segment with George from Treasury Wines this morning. Fellas, I'm doing some solar power working at a winery called Sam Miranda King Valley Winery near Warringarratta. Give these guys a plug, if you don't mind, please, because they're doing it really tough since COVID-19 and plus the fires up that way. So we've done that for you this morning. And Gary, Calvin from Caulfield sent a text in. He wants to know whether or not...
Calvin's been calling in a bit late lately.
He has. Could you get George to recommend an intimacy wine for the next segment? Can you get George to work on that for us, please?
Well, George is your man, but I'm sure he could do that for sure. Love the wine segment. My mate did a blind tasting for his 40th. Prizes for best win, picking the clean skin. My partner won best win. I'm not sure what was better, her winning or telling her in the morning as she didn't remember the night. That can happen when you get onto a nice bottle of wine, Wispy. But anyway, we're just filling there as we're waiting to get up the coach of the GWS Giants, who's always good to our program. He's been good enough to join us again this morning, Leon Cameron. Welcome.
G'day, Gary and Tim. How are you?
We're good.
We're going very well, mate. We just had a wine segment. Are you a wine drinker?
I have probably drank a little bit more than I should have over the last 10 weeks. But a few wines here and there. Not massive, but my wife, I'll have to dob her in. She's the wine drinker of the family.
That's right. Not to excess. We're trying to educate our audience and ourselves in the process. Tim makes, he's got vines. He's got his own wines that he makes that he doesn't share. So we're trying to get up to speed with him, Baker.
Right, so he doesn't share at all, does he, Gary?
Not at all. He's got an exclusive winery and doesn't share with anyone, Tim. So if the Giants got up and won a premiership, would you give Leon a bottle of your Fiano?
No.
No. Fair enough.
That's the ultimate not sharing, isn't it?
No, I'd share with anyone, Leon. Are you a red wine drinker or a white wine drinker? You'd be a red wine drinker, would you not?
Yeah, probably more red, I'd say, Tim. Just the odd... Cab Sav every now and again, but I'm not, as I said, now and again, probably once the week's done and you might win a game and then sit back and enjoy for the week.
So in the last period of time, and you've been in isolation, you've been sitting back and you've been having a nice Cab Sav late at night, you've probably got the cigar in the left hand, you've got the slippers on and you've got your dressing gown on. What is it that's been consuming you most about the restart of the AFL season?
Yes, you're probably everything right, just bar the cigar, the slippers, and the sitting back at night. But I think the thing that probably consumes you the most is over the isolation, making sure your players and staff are all okay. That's probably number one. You just sort of you sit there at night and think how they're tracking, whether they're in back home to Victoria, South Australia, Western Australia, or so forth. You're just thinking how they're coping. And then you say how they're dealing with the training program, you know, knowing the ups and downs of what's going on, will they return this year, and all that sort of stuff, I suppose. That's probably consumed the most. And then when their news starts to start filtering through, you might be 5 or 6 weeks into that isolation. Oh, yeah, we might be returning in June or July. And then you start to piece together how we're going to return and what's our training going to look like. And then now we're actually into it in our first week and dealing with, you know, all the little challenges of that. But, you know, it's absolutely fantastic to be back, and we feel as though it's a privilege, actually, to be back at our job and doing what we love, mate.
Is your job... We spoke to Nathan Buckley a couple of nights ago, and sort of he painted the picture that he's more English Premier League manager than sort of hands-on day-to-day coach. How would you describe your role?
Yeah, I would absolutely probably agree on that, Gary. I would. I think when I first started out, you know, you're young and eager and done a long apprenticeship as an assistant coach, and all you want to do is impart everything you've learnt from previous clubs and philosophies from where you've grown up. And so then you find yourself involved taking so many different drills, and you look at the end of the session when you're first year coach and you go, well, I've just absorbed 75-80% of that session, and the assistant coaches are probably just waiting back to get their hands dirty as well. But no doubt you then got to learn to probably delegate a lot more and spend your time wisely. So, yeah, I mean, managing players and staff and then giving them opportunity to be themselves and not have the senior coach always look over the shoulder, I think it's definitely changed, especially the last, you know, 3 years. But, yeah, so this part in the last 8 weeks, has been managing from afar and making sure that each player and each staff member is in as best shape as they possibly could be, mentally and physically.
So if it continues to evolve in that manner, whereby you are sort of overseeing and you... Can you see the time when you will run a, or not you personally, but a senior coach will run the football department, contracts, the whole box and dice, and then your coaching group sort of sits underneath you, your assistant coaches and the like?
I don't think I can see that, Gary. I understand what you're saying. I can't see that just, I mean, maybe some others can, but there's probably got to be some sort of cut-off. And I know when you talk about manager, it's sort of like a different manager. You're managing a person's, you know, ability to play, dealing with a group, ready for performance on weekends. Right. Whereas your actual footy manager, he's got to deal with that real, you know, that interesting stuff about contracts. And when you're talking about contracts and that becomes a little bit more personal, the coach probably doesn't get involved in that as such. Yes, there's, you know, a lot of players that come out of contract and you're talking about how they're going and, you know, we'd love you to stay and all this sort of stuff. But in terms of pure figures and money, where it becomes a bit personal, I think football managers play a huge role in that. And I remember when I was started, I think, because I was thinking about this the other day, when I first got drafted to Footscray back in the late 80s, they still, like Mick Malthouse was the coach, but they still had a football manager sit beside him, even though probably Mick ran the whole program. Mm. All contracts basically went through the footy manager back then.
Yeah, it makes sense. Sorry,
Leon, is it going to be a greater challenge to motivate the players to get them up to play and get them in the right emotional space before a game? I know Lee Matthews has talked about this, you know, the old rev-up speech coming back into vogue, maybe pre-game, that type of thing. Is this something that you've turned your attention to as well? Or are you just going to wait and see how it all plays out?
No, I think Lee's got a really fair point there. And it is a bit unknown. There's no doubt early, you know, you had something that was taken away from you for about 10 weeks. Everyone was prepared to play. We played round one and all of a sudden the season suspended. And so there's no doubt that's going to make every player across all 18 clubs as hungry as ever. They just want to play. You're on national TV. You're going to be playing games. You're doing something you love. Yes, that atmosphere of crowd and emotion is not there. So I think you would think probably, you know, 80, 90% of your players are going to be absolutely tuned in, ready to play a brand of footy that, you know, I think we'll sit back and everyone's going to admire from all clubs. But there's no doubt there's going to be a couple in your playing group that, for whatever reason, it might struggle for a little bit of motivation at times. But I think from the start, I reckon there's going to be high-intense games, excitement to play, and so they're going to be playing to the last minute. I think as the season goes on, Tim, and there might, you know, you start to get that win-loss, there might be struggles, there could be injuries, there could be challenges, weather starts to be a bit cold, all the challenges you have in footy seasons, in terms of that motivation, you know, that us against them or whatever you want to do and what angle you go down, there's no doubt I think that's going to come into play a fair bit more this year.
Is this going to be the great flag to win? Damien Hardwick spoke about this the other day, about this, and I would think that that's something that he's spoken to his players about in terms of the motivation for the season when they get restarted as well. It's probably going to be the more difficult one to win, but is it going to be the great flag to win this year, given all the challenges that you're facing?
Yes, absolutely. I've got no doubt. Yeah, and, you know, I think all coaches will be in the same boat. I heard Dimmer say that, and, you know, and I'm not going to shy away. We've said that to our footy club and our players already this week when we get back. I mean, the side that, you know, wins a flag this year is going to be the, you know, well, clearly the best team in terms on the field, but the most disciplined off the field. And it'll be a magnificent achievement because of all the challenges and, you know, obstacles, hurdles you've got to get over. And there will be some more, you know. There's excitement now because we see a date, the 11th of June. That Thursday night, everyone gets to see footy again. And but there'll be some more challenges and obstacles, and whether that's injury, whether that's travelling, you know, the way we need to travel now. And so all those little obstacles in terms of that physical and emotion output, that's going to be huge, dealing with no crowds compared to, who knows, at the back end of the year, then crowds could be in. And so I think it's going to be a huge challenge, and the side that's good enough to win is going to look back and say it's a magnificent year to win a flag.
Just on those travel challenges, so talk about going up and back on the same day, which I'd imagine Sydney and Adelaide, if that in fact Adelaide are able to, would be in that hitting zone. Have they talked to you about charter flights, you and the Swans, or anything of any of the logistics concerning that?
Just started to hear some talk now, Gary, in the last few days. It hasn't been specific, but probably like you and Tim, just started to hear those murmurings in the last 3 or 4 days. Look, again, our job is to, whatever is thrown our way, we deal with. And I think if it's an opportunity to spend the money wisely and us and the Swans jump on the same plane to go down to Melbourne and play on the same day, and then we fly back together, then that's common sense in such an interesting, you know, year that we face. So if we fly in on the day of the game and we play, clearly, we you know, there's going to be some challenges there because, you know, A, we're not used to it, but B, it could be challenges with flight delays and weather and things like that. So no doubt they're looking at everything possible. But, yeah, again, probably harping back on, you know, going through, and if you're good enough to win the flag, all these things that you confront, you know, you're going to sit back and say it's well worthwhile. So I don't know how your hamstrings would go, Gary, travelling on the day. So,
well, I was actually talking about it on Monday with Jonathan Brown and Nick Revolt, and it was like when I mentioned that we used to do it as players, Jared was with on my side, it was like they thought we'd fly to the LA and back for a game of footy. I mean, it is doable. It has been done.
Yes. Yeah, and if you actually look closely, like I remember when I started, this exactly the same thing was on. I mean, it's 1 hour and 20 in a plane, and for us, you know, and there's obviously, you know, 2 10 Victorian teams and 2 in New South Wales, and it's probably 2 hours to Brisbane. So it's done before, and so no doubt they're looking at it, and it's like anything, we'll deal with it and make sure we're ready to go.
Hey, Leon, just one final question from me. Callum Ward, how's his return tracking?
Yeah, he's going really well. Tim, and I got to ask this question yesterday about, you know, will he return straight away? And right now I can't see a reason why not. The challenge is he would have been playing for 5 weeks by now. He was going to return about round three, so he'd probably been playing for 5 or 6. Clearly, in the past, guys that come back from knee recos normally have 1 or 2 in the lower level to get their bearings and just, you know, find their feet. We don't have that luxury as such yet. I mean, they may bring in some practice matches against, you know, us and against the Swans when the season gets rolling. But I'm watching him, and he's on top of his training at the moment. When contact comes in next week and the week after, that's clearly going to be a crucial thing that we need to look at him, even though he was doing lots of contact a month before we broke. So he sort of sits in that, does he need a game, doesn't he need a game? We clearly know what he's capable of doing. What I look at is it's a great bonus, and if we think he's right, then we'll pick him for round two.
It'd be great to see him back. He's such a respected player in the competition. Hey, great of you to join us. Facilities First, new coach's partner. What can you tell us about them?
Yeah, look, it's awesome. Yeah, I mean, obviously, clearly trying times, and to have, Facilities First, extend their contract out by a couple of years. They've only been with us for a short amount of time, but to have that in these trying times, and basically all of our key partners have been fantastic over this time, and with our members and supporters, I think just speaks volume that the club's in as good a position as we can be. And clearly in an interesting time of what's going on. So, we're wrapped, mate. They have a great coach as sponsor, and, they've extended out for 2 years, so we really look forward to that.
A great show of faith, and we're happy to back it up as well. So Facilities First there. You'll see them on the coaches' get-up and in the coaches' box, I'm sure. Thanks for joining us, mate. We love having you on, and good luck next couple of weeks. It's going to be exciting.
Cheers, Gary. Cheers, Jim.
Oh, gee, I tell you, the rain continues to fall here in Melbourne town. Very, very wet. Wispy, not sure what that does for the vines around the country. Are you happy with a bit of rain for you, your little Fiona vines?
Well, after doing all that digging and weeding last week, perfect time for a bit of rain. Put a little bit of compost on the vines, and they will be loving it right across the country this morning, Gary.
George Semios is from Treasury Wines, Wispy, and you've introduced this as a way to try, I think, a way to educate me and hopefully take our audience along for the ride. Georgie joins us. Welcome, George.
Good morning, Gary, or AKA Greg. Good morning, Tim.
Very well received, this segment, from the vast majority of our audience in the last couple of weeks, Georgie. Excellent. So well done to you. I'm not allowed to ask questions. Tim's going to run the section, and I come in just when I can think of something.
Well, George, let's start here this morning, okay? Because there are a lot of people out there that have been in isolation. They've probably had a special bottle of wine that's maybe been sitting in their cellar, maybe it's been sitting in their cupboard, whatever. They thought that they'll open this on a special occasion. What do you do if you've got a bottle of wine that may have been sitting in the cupboard for a while? How do you test it to make
Great
sure that
question.
It's still okay?
I've got a couple of them.
Yeah, it's a good one, Tim, and it's interesting. You make the comment about people being at home. I've had numerous tests and photos from people over the isolation period, in particular on Easter Sunday, where people sent me pictures of bottles that they've kept for that special occasion. Who knows what a special occasion is? I think actually spending time with your family and having a good lunch is as special a time as any. I think the key is you need to have known where you got the wine from, how long you've had it, and you know, we haven't got the time this morning, but in the end, there's a few indicators on what you should be putting in the cellar. But fair to say, if the bottle of wine doesn't look full anymore, i.e. the level of the wine in the bottle has started to evaporate, it's probably ready to drink. Otherwise, it will be salad dressing. And the other thing is, don't keep them for too long. We absolutely get too emotional with bottles of wine. We think that special occasion is going to come. It's like picking the top of the share price. It's never, you're ever going to do it.
Okay, you take the cork.
How long is too long, though, George?
Okay,
this is in my hitting zone, because I've got some wine that I've had down for quite some time.
Without knowing the wine, Gary, I think in the end, if you've got something for more than 10 years, you want to know that it's been made for the long haul, it's from a quality winery, it's the right varietal, it's got the right vintage, and you've looked after it. So there's a few variables there. But, you know, if you've got something from your 21st, Gary, then I'd be starting to look at it pretty soon.
All right, Tim.
Have you got anything from your 20?
Yes, indeed, I have. Yes, I have.
What, a Brown Brothers spat lace Lexi?
Yes,
or something
I
like
have.
That?
Oh, you're a wine snob, Tim.
No, I'm not. Hey, George, so you go to the restaurant, okay, and there's a group of you there, and you've got partners and the rest, and you order a nice bottle of wine. You think it's a nice bottle of wine, and the waiter comes out, or the sommelier comes out, and they open it, and they just put a little bit in your glass. What are you looking for when everyone's looking at you because they've poured the little bit in your glass. What is it you're supposed to do under those circumstances with the spotlight on you?
Well, you're supposed to pretend you know what you're doing, step one, yes, even if you don't. And then secondly, look, it was a ritual that was invented, really, because we used to have an issue with cork taint. And so, you know, cork being a natural product comes off the bark of a tree. What we were finding was that there was a failure rate with that cork. It would pick up a disease that would infect the wine. So ultimately, it was introduced for you to smell and taste the wine. And if it smelt or tasted musty or mouldy. But secondary, it's also the opportunity for you to say whether you like it or not. Now, a good restaurant, if you're not quite sure that you really like that wine, they'll probably try to find you something else. But ultimately, it was to find the fault. But with screw cap now, or stealth enclosure, we don't see the fault anymore. So the ritual still exists, but you don't really need to do it.
Is it okay to send it back?
Jeez, Tim's taken over.
Is it okay to send it back?
God.
Okay, you give it the sniff test. Everyone's looking at you, and you just wave it away. Is that okay?
It's okay. Yes, it's okay. And I think a quality establishment that you'd be frequenting, Tim, if you said to them, I'm not sure about this wine, it doesn't smell right, or I'm not quite sure about it, they'll take it back. It's okay to do that. Absolutely.
Okay, Gary, George, over got lots to you of questions. For a novice question. Yeah.
No, well, these are novices like me coming in off the speckle text. George, what's a recommended Shiraz? I reckon this would be a question that most people want to know the answer to. About $18 to $25, that's a ripper, that's ready to go now. That's Robbie from Carlton. Have you got a recommendation?
Look, I think if you want a Shiraz, you've got to go to South Australia. You've probably got to look for Barossa. The best value Shiraz in Australia by far is Pepperjack. Now, you're not going to put that away for 15 years, but to drink now, to drink in the next 5 to 10 years, awesome. Otherwise, I go back to a winery called Saltram, celebrated 160 years last year. If you've been doing something for 160 years, you've probably worked out how to do it pretty well. And they have a wine called Mamre Brook. You can buy it for about $25. Drink it now, or put it away for 10 to 15 years. It'll look awesome.
And we'll put these recommendations up on our socials because people genuinely, they might know as much as me and you, Wisp, but they might know. And a Pepperjack Shiraz is a no-brainer. Well done. Oh, you go. Oh, yeah, I've got a bottle of 1990 Grange. Should I drink it? That's come off our speckle text.
No, hold on to that one. That was wine of the year in Wine Spectre. That put Grange on the map. That is one of the best Granges ever made. So whoever's got that bottle, look after it, keep it in the dark, keep it away from vibration, keep it away from your friends when they come around for a drink one night. It's a ripper.
How much would that be worth?
Sorry, Gary?
How much would that be worth?
Oh, that wine there is probably worth about $1,500 a bottle now. When it was released, it was probably $100. So whoever's got that bottle, it's a ripper.
I think most of our tribe listening this morning have got a cellar at the bottom, of their property somewhere.
One of our sceptical listeners, I know money makes the world go round, but this is advertising gone nuts. It's got nothing to do with advertising. We're just trying to talk about some wine. Hey, should you when you have a bottle of wine, should you put it out into a decanter?
Good question.
Yes, I'm a fan of that, but surprisingly, not for very old wine. So I generally decant a big, you know, robust red wine that might be 5 or 6 years of age. But if it's 15 to 20 years of age, I wouldn't decant it because what happens is the oxygen opens up the wine too quickly. Young, big wines, absolutely. Put it into a jug, decanter, and then put it back into the bottle.
Hey, thanks for joining us, mate. We love it. We'll have you back on again
thanks,
in a couple
Greg.
Of weeks' time.
Thanks, Tim.
Yes. Thanks, Georgie Samios has got a nice little way about him there, Wispy. So we'll get those recommendations up. We'll get George's wine. Why don't you get George's wine recommendations for a show? Yeah, go through all the different varieties, Whispers. And
great
we'll put
idea.
Them up on our website. Somewhere around the $18 to $35 mark. You reckon that's about right?
No, I think that's a great idea. And look, not everybody loves this segment, but I think it's a great opportunity just to pause and just do something a little bit different, a little bit broader occasionally, Gary. I'm in for it. You?
For 10 minutes every couple of weeks, Riss. I think it's a no-brainer. I love it. For Toyota new car time, search Toyota Value Advantage. That's our Cooler of the Year prize. So when the lines are open, jump on that Toyota Kluger GX2 wheel drive is an absolute belter.